In this hour's show at MCAA, Armand Collegian from O'Brien Mechanical Live. Welcome to the Content Crew Podcast MCAA series live from San Antonio, Texas. I'm your Content Crew Chief, James Benham, joined by the Content Guru, Rob McKinney, and the Iron Man of IT, Jeff Sample. The Content Crew MCAA 18 series is focused on plumbing, mechanical, and service contractors, as well as industry innovators at the MCAA annual convention. So geek out, enjoy the ride, and listen in on this insider's view of the mechanical event of the year. Today is Wednesday, March 28th, 2018, and this hour's show topic, Technology Strategy for Contractors, with Armand Collegian from the O'Brien Mechanical, live from MCA Annual. Back in a second. Well, second show of the final day here, boys. How's it going? Rob, good to see you back.
Doing good. I was around taking care of business.
Taking care of business?
Business.
As we say on the smart bid side, we take care of business. Got to keep bidding. Jeff Sample.
I'm excited, man. Still here. Round two for the day.
Ding, ding.
Let's go. I'm still buzzing from the dessert last night.
Oh, the dessert party
was off the hook.
Off the hook. In the Milwaukee band there.
I was going to say, thanks, Milwaukee band, for making me shake my rumpa. And
there's something.
Yeah, it was a good time, man.
Good.
Armand, did you go last night?
I did. The music was excellent. It's that 70s, 80s rock era that you know the words to the songs, and you're just enjoying every song they play.
Back when computers didn't generate music.
Didn't need to listen to it on Spotify. No, you made your own playlist with your own cassettes.
Yeah, that was exciting.
You made mixtapes, didn't you?
You had to have one for every road trip that you went on.
Awesome. So just a quick reminder for our listeners that we're bringing interviews and news all week from MCA 18. Get the Content Crew news delivered right to your inbox. Sign up at jbknowledge.com. We can also download a copy of our annual technology report. Back to you, Armand. We got a lot to talk about. I mean, we could really run the gambit. We love talking about construction. We love talking about construction tech, but we always like talking about the people behind it, because this is a people business. I mean, this is a big-time people business.
James, you're well aware of what it takes to run a business and how to grow it and make it succeed. And I think the first and foremost thing you have to remember, it's about relationships and people. Other than that, the rest of the stuff just makes your job easier and makes you more profitable. And that's the joy of technology. At the forefront of it is people and the relationships they establish.
So, speaking of the people, you are born and raised San Francisco, California.
I am.
Hardcore Golden State Warrior fan.
San Francisco Giants, Golden State Warriors, San Francisco 49ers when they're good.
Okay, so
you had a good run though.
I'm 39. The first Super Bowl I remember was 49ers Bengals, and I believe it was Joe Montana,
1981.
Yeah, and Jerry Rice, was it Jerry Rice and Joe Montana?
Jerry Rice, no, Dwight Clark.
Dwight, yeah,
Dwight Clark.
Yeah, I mean,
and the catch against your Dallas Cowboys.
Put
them into the Super Bowl. Not yours, but
I've lived in
Texas. I'm in the state of Texas.
I've lived in Texas for 20 years, and yes, I do have a giant buckle right now that says Texas. So I do love Texas, but I am actually born in Louisiana, so I'm a Saints fan, like a big-time Saints fan.
Saints, LSU?
Yeah.
Well, Tulane?
No. LSU.
LSU.
When you're born, I went to Texas A&M, but unless they're playing LSU, I'm rooting for the Tigers. When you're born in Louisiana, you are required, I think it's a state statute, to root for the Saints and the Tigers.
There's a chip in your arm that says you better or else.
It comes with the birth certificate, right?
So, yeah, exactly.
The birth certificate, insert chip.
We don't do birth certificates in Louisiana. Just like, oh, that's Boudreaux. He was born. He was born around June.
Somewhere over there.
It's
about
okay.
30 years ago.
It's okay.
It's okay. Now, you're a San Francisco guy, but you have an interesting personal background. Your parents are both Armenian.
They're Armenian. They're immigrants to the Bay Area. I was, first generation, born and raised. The Armenian culture is a very tight-knit culture. It's really pleasant because it lets you learn more about not only yourself but other cultures as well. It gives you that opportunity to respect and to understand that, hey, the world's a big world out there. There's a lot more than just the little piece that you might consider home here in the United States. And it's given us the opportunity to meet a lot of people and to be able to travel the world and see other Armenians around the world and have a common bond.
And you speak Armenian, and your kids went to Armenian schools, too.
I speak, read and write. My kids, similarly, there's an Armenian school in the Bay Area, and they've gone through it's K-8. It's a great school. It gives them a good foundation. It's a family-oriented kind of school, and they have a friend base as they move on through their lives.
Now, there's some other very famous people who are Armenian, and there's others who are very famous that claim to be Armenian but are not. So
Eric Parsegian, there's one. Let's go way back. Jimmy Tarkanian.
Armenian. The Kardashians. The Kardashians. We had to mention that. They're Armenian.
They have their pluses and minuses, but, you know, it makes people aware that there are other cultures out there, and Armenian's one of them, and that's a positive for us.
And one of the reasons there's so many Armenians all over the world is there was a big diaspora.
1915, 103 years ago, the Ottoman Empire thought that they could eliminate a race of people, and they were the Armenians. And they haven't succeeded because we're still here, and we're still still around, and we're still proud of who we are and the culture and the work ethic, if you will, because we are a very entrepreneurial race.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I've met a lot of entrepreneurs who are Armenian, and it seems to be very pervasive. Almost like I've met a lot of international trade folks that are Lebanese, and it's because Lebanon has a multi-thousand-year history of being international trade, and it's fascinating to see how there are certain cultures that have certain aspects to them.
After the Armenian genocide, many Armenians migrated or pushed out, exiled into Lebanon and Syria, and in those areas, they were able to thrive because of the ability to live with other nations and other cultures and other races and other religions. The Armenians aren't we've been around for a long, long, long time. Before the Roman Empire, before the Greek empires, there was the Armenian Empire. And yeah, we've been persecuted a lot. We've been trampled on a lot, but we're still around and we're still doing our thing.
That's awesome. So fascinating. And speaking of entrepreneurship, you're an entrepreneur.
I am. I went to school at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, graduated, had a great job at Johns Controls for 10 years, and then realized that I needed to be the man. I couldn't work for a corporate Fortune 500 or Fortune 100 company anymore, and had an opportunity to partner in to O'Brien Mechanical. Did that 20 years ago, and since then, it's been a great, great ride.
How'd that come about?
A sales manager of mine at Johnson left the company. He started his own distributorship. I was going to partner with him, and then he said, "No, I'll need you as an employee." But what worked out is he rented space from O'Brien Mechanical, and he said, "John O'Brien's looking for a partner. He's looking to grow his business, and because he had gotten to a place where he could either retire or move on, and the market was booming." And it was a 1-hour interview. Welcome. I want to be a partner with you. This is what we'll do, and this is what we'll do together. And we've been gangbusters since.
How big was O'Brien at that time?
We had 3 employees.
And roughly how much building volume a year?
Oh, less than $1 million.
And where are you at now?
75 to 100 employees, and we are at anywhere from 35 to 40 million a year.
Yeah, it's incredible. Nice.
That's great.
So it's a pretty wild ride. I mean, you're looking at, 98, so 20 years now.
20 years. Birth of my kid, we moved to a new house, and I changed jobs.
Yeah, you know, my dad started a new business with every kid. He did. It was crazy. My mom was like, "No more kids.
Sorry,
no more
businesses." So are you done having kids? Are you?
Yeah, I'm done. I have 2 daughters, and they're more than enough. It's all good. my dad had started a different company with each kid, and you know, I was the last one, and so that was it.
Turmoil is good. Turmoil makes you rethink whatever you have in front of you, and
it does.
It makes you manage your time a lot better.
Change is the only constant.
So, again, on your background, Johnson Controls. What did you do? You're an account manager.
Manager, dealt with sales, and actually, it was more relationships. That's what I dealt with. I didn't worry about the nuts and the bolts and how to put it all in. We dealt with, hey, this Chevron's our customer, and this is who we need to take care of, and they're a large corporate entity in the Bay Area. We did. We took care of all their needs. We took care of their controls. We took care of their fire alarm. We took care of their security systems. And it was that was the type of business that I dealt with Johns Controls.
And also your other job, because it really becomes another job, is as a board member here at MCA, correct?
It's been a great experience. MC, when I first joined O'Brien Mechanical, my partner said, you really need to go get involved with the local MCA chapter. That opened so many doors to me. I know we're all competitors. I know we all try vie for the same projects. But at the same time, we never want to see any of us fail at what we're doing. It was an enriching and an uplifting and a supportive group that said, hey, if you ever need anything, call me. I can help you out. You need some samples on welding procedures, call me. We do that all the time. And I've done that. I've done that over the years. And I got some great feedback and some great mentorship, which has given me the opportunity to be where I am here today, a board member on the national board. And I hope I'm doing the same for people that are coming up through the ranks behind me. I was the youngest probably on the board at that time. And since then, there's been a lot of change, a lot of new faces, and the Bay Area is a thriving area, and I'm glad to see that I can play a part and I can give back to the organization that's given me so much.
Now let's talk a little bit on philosophy. Specifically, I want to hear your thoughts. What is your philosophy on spending on technology in your company? Why do you spend dollars and where?
Being in the Bay Area and the heart of Silicon Valley and now all the technology that's moved into San Francisco, if you're not at the forefront, you are way behind. You can't be looking in that rearview mirror, oh, I should have, or I could have, or why didn't I? We spend whatever we need to spend to get to the place where our company or our product is competitive with the larger companies. So, yeah, we're not the largest company in San Francisco. We're not the smallest company in San Francisco. We're located in San Francisco for a reason. It's got a good base. It gives you that feel that you're a local. That's important. At the same token, you need to be aware of what it takes to get the job done. I don't have the resources of the large multinational, if you will, or national companies that have companies in every one of the states and do $200 million. I don't have that resource. So whatever it takes to get me to that level so I can be competitive on those projects, it's not even a question. It's just you go ahead, do it. Let's just make sure we're doing it right.
Well, what's really unique about that is that you're not actually, building up a whole big IT staff or building on all of that. You're actually doing a lot of that through outsourcing, aren't you?
Definitely. So there's, especially at the conferences like this, when you go to the Manufacturer Supplier Council exhibit and you talk to the people that are there, the companies that are there and what they're offering, there's many software programs. There's many hardware items that you can use. The Total Station, I'm sure you've all talked about the Total Station. I've listened to your podcast. It's a great product. It makes a lot of sense. But to have a trained individual to be on every project to be able to use that is very difficult for a smaller corporation. So to the credit of the companies that do it, there is actually a company in San Francisco that has a multi-trade agreement with the electricians, the carpenters, the plumbers, and the sheet metal guys, who will come out to a job site and will lay out the job using your Total System Station information. We feed them the information on the same deck. They can be laying out for the electricians, the plumbers, and the sheet metal guys with a composite crew, and we get it done in half the time what it would take for my guy to get up to speed again and to do it just for that project.
So all three parties will all pay a share of the fees?
We will, or they'll have three different crews because as a plumber, and that's probably what we do in San Francisco, we're plumbing, and our niche market is the multifamily commercial residential units, if you will. So they're apartments or condos, and they're anywhere from 100 to 300 units. When you're laying out a deck, there's a lot of plumbing that goes on, and there's a lot of penetrations for the bathrooms and the plumbing walls, and it takes a dedicated person pretty much to do it for that day, at least for the plumbers, same for the electricians.
How'd you do layout back in the day?
Set of plans, a plumb line, and a tape measure. And that's pretty much how it was. And it took twice as long. The other thing, the other challenge we have being in San Francisco and doing a lot of the city work is there isn't a lot of time. They have a small footprint. You've got a small area to work in. And they have got to get that building up and done quickly. And what's the slowest thing that can happen is the layout, getting the floors poured, and moving up towards that through the building. Right now, it's about a week of floor is the norm, and that's getting the deck laid out, penetrations done, rebar poured, and then onto the next floor.
And that requires a lot of coordination between all the MEP, between all the subs, right? And how's that coming along for you guys? It seems like you're doing a lot of that to get things done in these tight spaces.
We are, and luckily the subcontractors in the other trades that we work with on more than one project. So we're not battling each other. It's more, again, of that relationship. I know the owners of the electrical companies and the sheet metal companies are on the same deck with me, and we all work together. We will hire the same person to do the layout. We will hire the same person that will take care of our fire stopping. We'll work together to be able to speed up the job, get the project done on time, and be as efficient as we can on a given floor.
That's a really awesome way to see you guys do business, because that's a big challenge. There's not enough collaboration in the industry as it is, and to see you guys collaborate across and even use the same subs for your subs, I mean, that's great. Rob?
Very interesting talk to hear about how you're doing the collaboration. I'm curious, what about more on the software side, even in the field between the trades you're working with, and what are you using? Because we had kind of an offline conversation. You could get off-the-shelf software, or you can build custom software. How does that work for your business and the partners?
So what we've learned on our own is every project has its own set of requirements. And we figured this out about 3-4 years ago. Again, we're in Silicon Valley. You can hire anyone to build an app for you with a Craigslist ad. It's pretty much that simple. It's it's that easy to do. And having said that, we had a couple of contacts with some ties with a developer, an app developer, and we said, this is what we need. We need an app where we can track people's time. We need an app where we can track how we code that time to a project. We need an app. We need to be able to do it quicker, not just an app, but we need to be able to do this quicker. We need to be able to track RFIs for a project. We need to be able to track safety meeting minutes and who attended. We need to be able to track how they've taken their breaks or a number of items that occur on a project, and have it be directed to accounting, have it be directed to the project manager, and have it be on file, especially with the GC, on the RFIs and the safety meeting minutes. And so we realized that we were doing it four different ways, and every PM was doing it their own way. Why don't we just consolidate it all? And we got to the point where, hey, we can build that. We can do that through software. We can do that through handheld devices. Everyone in the field has an iPad or an iPhone. And they brought that all in. We spent about a year developing it. We're still fine-tuning it. But for the last 3 years, that's what we do. It's our own internal app. It takes the best pieces of some of the software that's out there, the Procores, the Roombix, even the Total System Station, and taking all that and putting it into one location where we're integrating it all into our accounting system. Sage is our accounting system. It integrates into that.
Fascinating. Now, does it work with other people? You're mainly just keeping all that data in-house, or can you export and interact?
We can export it. That we haven't gotten to that point yet where we're giving this information to, or giving the software out to other people. The information goes to whoever we want it to go to. So on every project, whatever it needs to go to, whatever GC or whatever their PM or RPMs, that information is open and is available for those people to, as a service, we offer that to the GCs. It seems to be working well. It seems to be catching on, and I think more and more you're going to see either companies develop their own app or to utilize the software companies that are out there to do similar things that we're doing right now.
Now, fun question: is it on iOS or Android?
It's on iOS. It is on iOS. That's how it was developed. I had no say in that, and that's kind of the way it is. I'm not a very Apple pro. Yeah. Individual, and that's just, you know, that's upbringing. I think I was more interested in how, not so much Android, but DOS and your IBM type computers, how they operate, and that's what I've learned. I think the Apples are more of the, I just want to touch it and push it. I don't want to know how it works, just so that it works.
Sure, it separates the user a little bit more than DOS did. So my first computer was a Gateway 2046 running MS-DOS 3.1. And the first thing I did was learn how to write batch files and you know, you had a much better view of the mechanics of your computer back in the day.
I probably did.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know,
Apple IIe wasn't doing what it's doing today. Let's just say that.
Yeah, exactly. It's fascinating. Let's talk about challenges. 20-year-old company. What was the biggest challenge 20 years ago? And what's the not just tech? So don't constrain this to technology. This could be labor relations. This could be government. Right, when you're in the most regulated state in the United States, it could be government regulations. It could be anything. What was the biggest challenge 20 years ago? And what's the biggest challenge now?
I think that the biggest challenge 20 years ago was the same thing, collection and the integration of information on any project. That challenge has been solved, if you will. So the biggest challenge now, 20 years later, is, well, how do we make that so that we're utilizing it the best of our ability? And that's, I think, the challenge for anyone who's in technology or even construction. It doesn't matter what market you're in or what business you're in. If you're looking at how do I make myself better, and how do I use the tools that are available to me to make myself better? That's your biggest challenge. Google does it every day, right? Apple is doing it every day. They're coming up with new phones, and that new phone had better be doing something better and better and more productive for you. Facial recognition. We might be doing time cards via facial recognition to prove or to show to whoever, whatever agency we need to, that person's on the job site. You now have tracking of individuals by RFID with their ID cards, correct? So if there's ever an emergency on a job site, you know where people are at. Those are important issues. And that's, I think, the challenge is, how do I make that? How do I have what's out there in the field? How do I use what's been developed and make it work for me? Because everything doesn't work for every company. You have to tweak a little bit, or you build your own app to make it work for you. At the same token, what you're doing is you're moving yourself to become more profitable with the tools that are available.
Yeah, let's talk about tool adoption and tech adoption in general. I get to speak to a lot of different trade groups, and union and non-union. And it's been interesting here at MCAA, because these are all union mechanical contractors, and you're an owner of a union mechanical contractor. I have found this group to be remarkably proactive in technology, and I hypothesized that this was in part because of the much higher labor cost you have. You have to drive more efficiency than a non-union contractor. Does that weigh in on your decision-making on tech adoption?
It has to. If you look at, especially in San Francisco, we have, rightfully so, we are a very expensive cost of living area. It costs people double, if not triple, compared to some parts of the United States. We understand that. We understand that a fair wage is important for the people that work for us. The same token, that wage is a major burden on our projects. How do we be more efficient to be able to compete in a market like San Francisco? We fabricate everything. Everything we do is fabricated. We use all the technology at our fingertips, whether it be modeling, BIM, modeling, spooling, to fabricating down the shop, where everything is compact, it's easy to assemble, and it goes out in the field. We still have plumbers that are knowledgeable out in the field. They know what they're putting in. We're not just an assembly. It's not a Lego factory. You're not opening up the diagram and saying, well, A goes into B, and I better make sure I get the right piece there. No, it's partly like that, but at the same time, you have to understand what you're putting in. If it's wrong or if it doesn't work for any reason, hey, that's great. So what? We have those instances. We're not losing because of that. We're actually gaining more information and making it more efficient for the next time we do it. But at the same time, we've saved a lot of time getting those materials to the field and putting them in.
Do you find that you're, as a union contractor, having to race towards 100% fabrication prefab more than a non-union contractor would because of the labor rate differential? Do you find that your group of union contractors are more technologically proactive?
We have a great partnership with the UA, and they're on the same boat, the same mindset that we are. That together, if we can both learn how to become better efficient in what we do, why wouldn't we want to continue to work together? I don't know how the non-union contractor works. They might not have that ability or that wherewithal to see or to partner in with their employees, because they're our employees, but they're also our partners.
Yeah.
So if we succeed, they succeed.
It's a totally different labor relationship.
And it, I think it's positive in that we're getting a great crew who's been trained and understands the industry and the work that they're doing. And together we're able to come up with ideas or to say, hey, what if we do this? Wouldn't this work? Or how do we do this together? And that commitment from two different entities, not just me as a business owner, but them as labor side, it's helped. It's grown the market in San Francisco, and it's kept us strong as a union market because of the work that we do together.
Yeah, what I like, too, is that if you decide you want to go into a new market, you can contact the local there, sign onto their contract, and then go. You know, it's not the same as another contractor who's going to have to go and try and recruit and train people on their own volition. You're going to contact the UA local there.
That's correct, but let's also remember that it's built on relationships. So you have to know the market. You can't just come in and say, hey, I want to do this job. I want to be a new player. You have to understand the market and the nuances with that market, the people in that market, and what it takes to do a project. After that, for sure, you can go anywhere and you can do anything.
So you just talked a lot about, you know, BIM and some of the prefabrication work you're doing now to get ahead and be efficient. What's the next one out on the horizon you guys are looking at? You know, you guys custom build software in-house, but what's that next one you see in the headlights that you want?
You just talked to Brett Young, and I think they're working on, and his company is working on some things that are excellent coming up in the future. How the whole development or the modeling of projects is going to become, I don't want to say commoditized, but it's going to become a lot simpler.
Yeah.
Right now we can even outsource our BIM work. If we're overloaded, we can do that. But at the same time, everything's reviewed in-house by our in-house engineers. So we're the experts.
Right.
And when we put it in, we have to be the experts.
Yep.
Similarly with that, we can have software to make our lives easier, but as long as it's reviewed again by us as a company and we put our name on it, and that's the most important thing. Our name's out there. We're an established San Francisco contractor. It's been around for 45 years. We're going to continue to be that established San Francisco contractor, and that only occurs if you put in good work.
Yeah, and so you're talking about like Project Virga that he's talking about coming down the pipes, and then something like Hangar Works, where it's like, hey, we're gonna, you know, Virga's gonna tap into your DNA and everything you did, and is gonna help you do things faster the way you do it. You're still gonna have to review it, but if you didn't have to do it as much up front, you have more time to review it. Same as Hangar Works that they were talking about from DeWalt, it doesn't take over the engineer, but it makes it faster, so that they're putting a good stamp on it, spending more time on QAQC, right?
DeWalt's venture into the Hangar Works, I think, is an excellent representation of what the future is coming to. Let's take it one step further even and go, hey, how about I develop a model and I develop a spool sheet, and that spool sheet, along with 20 other spool sheets, is sent to my supplier. And so I have that material that I need just in time at my loading dock. So this material has already been set, priced, put into my accounting system, and it's ready to go to build these assemblies.
And it shows up right when you need it.
And it shows up right when I need it.
It's not sitting on the shelves.
There's even more of what's coming down in the future. I know it's occurring. I know there's developments in that area right now. And when that occurs, it just makes you even more productive, efficient, and a player in this market when you have to be.
I so agree, because I think we're right at that point where we've created so many pieces of what, you know, they were referring to as your tech stack or the environment, but it's when all those pieces finally plug together and the supply chain you're talking about is linked into the modeling that you're doing, is linked into the tools that you're using from your vendors, that is going out to them and getting you exactly what you need at the right time. Rob, I just love where that's going. Rob?
Great conversation. We appreciate the philosophy you've got, all the pioneering work you're trying to do, man. Keep it up. It'll be fun to see what else you come up with.
Well, people listening to this podcast who have heard you over the, what's it, 100 and something podcasts that you've done,
yeah,
right? I think have learned quite a bit of what's going on in the technology world as it deals with contracting. You guys are on the forefront of what needs to occur or what is occurring. And I think the collaboration between us as contractors and you as the industry experts is great and it's exciting. And this is the time to be involved, and I'm glad I'm in it.
Yeah, me too, man. I love Peter Diamandis' discussion. If you remember him from last year, it's the most abundant time in human history, statistically speaking. And it is a great time to be alive. It's a great time to be in this business and have the opportunity to really move the needle significantly on the way the world builds things. And the way that we build things in one of the biggest markets in the world. So that's super exciting. You have your family here at MCA with you?
No, one kid's in school, one kid's out of school. We're always balancing with small kids on whether or not we can come as a family. It's fine. There's plenty of time. I'll be home in time for Good Friday and Easter, so we'll be fine.
Nice. MCA, I have found this to be a very family-centric organization. I mean, my goodness, there's a lot of families that come to this conference.
Yeah.
Depending upon when the spring break is and depending upon where it's located, for sure. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, not everybody can. I couldn't bring my family this time, but I've brought them to Orlando, and I bring them to as many of these as I can. And what's neat, and not every conference is that way. You know, there's a lot of conferences that people don't bring their wives and kids and spouses and significant others with them. And this organization is fascinating. Great leadership. You guys got a really healthy board. And I'm really excited about where the board's heading and the executive chairs. It's a very bright future for the group.
I'm amazed here at all the collaboration you're talking about. I mean, you guys are technically competitors, and I hear you guys swapping stories and swapping ideas way more than I have at some of the others. And I think that's really cool about the entire organization.
If I fail as a contractor in San Francisco, I think it affects the market and it affects how my competitors actually are able to do their job, because there's no reason why I should fail. We all want it's a sad day when a contractor goes out of business. So we'd rather see everyone succeed. No one needs to be greedy. Everyone can make a good living doing this work, and at the same time, be respectful of the people that you call your competitors.
That's a great philosophy. Really, thank you for coming on. That's a great way to end that one.
Yeah, it is. Rob, any closing comments?
Thanks for coming on, sir. Fascinating.
Awesome. I appreciate the opportunity.
So thank you for joining us for the MCAA show number 7 from MCAA 18, our interview with Armand Collegian from O'Brien Mechanical on the ConTech Crew podcast. MCA, just a reminder, is at MCAA News. That's MCAA.org. The ConTech Crew is at The ConTech Crew. I'm at James M. Benham. Rob is at ConApp Guru. Jeff is at Iron Man of IT. Armand's company is obmi2.com. To listen to this show, go to the show website at jbknowledge.com/theconTech crew. This is the ConTech Crew reminding you that construction starts here.